Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Tasya evam kinam atmanam. Manyamanasya kidyataha.
Manyamanasya kidyataha.
Krishnasya narado bhyagad.
Krishnasya narado bhyagad.
Ashramam pragudharatam.
Ashramam pragudharatam.
Tasya evam kila atmanam.
Tasya evam kila atmanam.
Manyamanasya kidyataha.
Manyamanasya
Krishnasya narado bhyagad.
Krishnasya narado
bhyagad. Ashramam pragudharatam.
Ashramam pragudharatam.
Tasya.
Tasya.
His.
His.
Evam.
Evam.
Thus.
Thus.
Kilam.
Kilam.
Inferior.
Inferior.
Atmanam.
Atmanam.
Soul.
Soul.
Manyamanasya.
Manyamanasya.
Thinking within the mind.
Thinking within the mind.
Kidhyataha.
Kidhyataha.
Regretting.
Regretting.
Krishnasya.
Krishnasya.
Of Krishna Dvaipayana Vyas.
Of Krishna Dvaipayana
Vyas. Narada Abhyagat. Narada came there.
Narada came
Ashramam.
Ashramam.
The cottage.
The cottage.
Prak.
Prak.
Before.
Before.
Udharatam.
Udharatam.
Said.
Said.
As mentioned before, Narada reached the cottage of Krishna Dvaipayana Vyasa on the banks of the Saraswati, just as Vyasadeva was regretting his defects. And purport by Srila Prabhupada. The vacuum, Prabhupada uses this in the purport twice, vacuum. The vacuum felt by Vyasadeva was not due to his lack of knowledge. Bhagavad Dharma is purely devotional service of the Lord to which the monist has no access. The monist is not counted amongst the Paramahamsas, the most perfect of the renounced order of life. Srimad Bhagavatam is full of narrations of the transcendental activities of the Personality of Godhead. Although Vyasadeva was an empowered divinity means he's a Shaktivesh avatar. We'll come back. He's an avatar of Vishnu, although he was also a jiva empowered by potencies of the Supreme Lord in a special way. He still felt dissatisfaction because in none of his works were the transcendental activities of the Lord properly explained. The inspiration was infused by Sri Krishna directly in the heart of Vyasadeva, and thus he felt the vacuum, as explained above. It is definitively expressed herewith that without the transcendental loving service of the Lord, everything is void. But in the transcendental service of the Lord, everything is tangible without any separate attempt at fruitive work or empiric philosophical speculation. And there's a verse with a very short purport that ends the chapter. I'll read that also. So tomorrow's verse is text 1. text 33, at the auspicious arrival of Sri Narada, Sri Vyasadeva got up and respectfully worshipped him, giving him veneration equal to that given to Brahmaji, the creator. And the Sanskrit word in the verse that indicates Brahma is Vidhi. Vidhi means Brahma, the first created living being. He is the original student, as well as professor of the Vedas. He learned it from Sri Krishna and taught Narada first. So Narada is the second Acharya in the line of spiritual disciplic succession. He is the representative of Brahma, and therefore he is respected exactly like Brahma, the father of all the Vidhis, or regulations. Similarly, all other successive disciples in the chain are also equally respected as representatives of the original spiritual master. So, tasyaivam kilamatmanam manyamanasya kidyataha krishnasya narado bhyagat ashramam prag udharatam. Translation, as mentioned before, Narada reached the cottage of Krishna, divine pine of Vyas, on the banks of the Saraswati, just as Vyasadeva was regretting his defects. A number of very nice and instructive points. The most outstanding message Prabhupada presents in the purport is whatever qualification one may have, as in Vyasa's case, one may have lots of knowledge. In his case, it's perfect knowledge. We'll hear in the next chapter, Narada certifies you get an A in your exam. You're qualified for the dean's list. You've got knowledge, and you didn't make any mistakes as far as presentation is concerned. So it's not that he's lacking in knowledge. The mistake is an inappropriate emphasis on something to the exclusion of that which should have been more emphasized. So that's the error. But it's not that anything that Vyasa had presented was wrong. It was A. It was complete. So if one has all the knowledge that Vyasa has, even if that's not going to happen, but even if that were to happen, or even if, as the purport is indicating, one may be a realized monist. We hear this terminology all the time, becoming one with the Supreme. Even if one has realized that, many people use that phrase kind of off the cuff, and they certainly don't live their life by that idea in the mind. Monism is not a philosophy to live by. It's not a philosophy that people, it's not. Largely, it's just imagination. Because we don't act in this world as persons who believe that everything is one. So many examples. When Prabhupada would be debating with monists, Prabhupada would say, if it's all one, then why are you wearing a shirt instead of a cotton ball? If it's all one, then give me all your money. Well, you won't do that because that's not where your convictions are. If it's all one, then why don't you put your food in some other opening besides this one? It's all one. We don't live that way. We recognize there are distinctions in terms of function. And God has created things with a particular function or purpose in mind. And we live our life accordingly. Now, the argument may go, that's all right for the sake of illusion, but in the ultimate reality, it's all one. So that is, you know, you give up illusion and the soul merges with Brahman. Then our acharyas give this example, that as the impersonalists say, the rivers may be many, but when they flow into the ocean, they merge into the ocean. And it's indistinguishable which river is the part of the ocean. It's one ocean. That's their metaphor. However, within the ocean, as within the river, there are aquatics that are swimming about and living in that ocean. So similarly, in the spiritual sky, one may wish to merge with the oneness of the vast spiritual sky, but within that vast spiritual sky, there are spiritual planets. And within those spiritual planets, there are living entities and the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and they're in a loving relationship with one another within that vast spiritual sky. So one may choose to ignore the spiritual planets and the spiritual sky and the loving relationships that are existing in that Vaikuntha realm, and choose instead to want to become one with the jyoti emanating from those planets and the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So it's not to deny that jyoti exists, but that's not the totality of the spiritual atmosphere. Or in other words, it's an incomplete realization of what lies beyond the duality of material existence. And even within this realm of material existence, we recognize that the creation is an emanation from the Supreme Lord, and there's a function. One function, there's two main functions. One function is to provide the living entity the opportunity to try to enjoy apart from the Supreme, which cannot be done, and therefore it's an illusion. But it appears to be an opportunity to enjoy apart from the Supreme. So to try to check it out, to try to enjoy. The other purpose of creation is to provide the living entity an opportunity to correct that mistake of trying to enjoy independent from the Supreme. It's a house of correction, not just a house of detention. And if one is attentive to this second purpose, there are many, many prompts that will indicate this was a bad choice. A very bad choice. Again and again and again, it's a very bad choice. And even if one is thoughtful, when things seem to be going well, that's also a prompt, because just right behind that it's going very well is a clenched fist waiting to let you have it. That something that you have is taken away. Prabhupada's example is, one of his examples was, he was going for a walk on Venice Beach and with the devotees. And they saw early in the morning tide coming in, and the surfers were out riding their surfboards. So Prabhupada explained, the very object of their pleasure, the surfboard, in just a moment can flip and crash and hit them in the head. There goes their enjoyment, and it just became suffering. One moment enjoying, and the next moment suffering. So he coined the phrase, they shouldn't be called surfers, they should be called sufferers. But they think that they're enjoying, and of course all the devotees appreciated Prabhupada's humor. And thereafter, whenever he went by the ocean or saw surfers, he would say, there are the sufferers. And that's the way of material enjoyment. The call of Maya is, come and enjoy me. Come and enjoy me. Come and enjoy me. Prabhupada described this as like the she-ass at the end of the day. The he-ass worked very hard, carrying big loads, and he gets his morsel of grass at the end of the day, and he approaches the she-ass for enjoyment, and she kicks him in the face. And this is their enjoyment. A morsel of grass and getting kicked in the face. Although the allure is, let me enjoy. So Prabhupada said, this is the program of Maya. The appeal is like in the Iliad or the Odyssey, the beckoning, the call, the motioning of this, whatever it is, entity, calling the hero to come. It's the call of Maya, come and enjoy, come and enjoy. It's by design. It's the house of correction. And the message is, you're thinking that you can enjoy independent from the Supreme. Well, here's the illusion that you can, but the reality is, it's suffering. And the suffering is not just the kick in the face. The suffering is, the deeper sense of suffering is being disconnected from what a real happiness is. We were discussing this yesterday, the suprasidati, suprasana, the happiness of the living entity is of the living entity. It's our natural composition, satchit ananda vigraha. The Supreme is the parama vigraha, and we're anu. He's vibhu, and we're anu. We're tiny, but as sparks are like unto the fire of the same quality, our capacity for happiness is intrinsic, and so we want that happiness. But the illusion of finding happiness apart from the Supreme is the spark that goes away from the fire, and the glowing capacity of the spark diminishes to a glow and eventually subsides altogether. But the capacity even of the spark that has now become a piece of charcoal, it's inherent. Take that charcoal piece or the charred piece of wood back into the vicinity of the fire, and its glowing capacity comes out again. And so that is the way of linking with the Supreme, or yoga is again connecting our consciousness to the Supreme, our consciousness to the Supreme consciousness, our pleasure potential with the Supreme pleasure. Anandamayo Vyasat in Vedanta Sutra, the indication is the Absolute Truth is Ananda. And we're part and parcel, and with that Ananda, so that Ananda potential is there. So it can be forgotten in Maya or realized. So now back to the monist, Prabhupada's comment in the purport. The monist is not counted amongst the Paramahansas, because this linking with the Supreme is made possible by recognizing the Supreme. And the monist is thinking, I am Supreme. I will merge with the Supreme and I will become the Supreme. There's no question of becoming the Supreme. The Supreme is Supreme. The Supreme doesn't become covered. This is one of the, if you study very carefully, the seventh chapter of Chaitanya Charitamrita Adi Lila, where Lord Chaitanya is discussing with the Shankaracharya sannyasi in charge of all the other sannyasis, the chief proponent of monism, Prakashananda Saraswati. This is the one of the like the buttons that Lord Chaitanya pushes, that, or if we're ever in some discussion or you're analyzing for your own satisfaction, where is the defect of monism in a philosophical position? The defect of monism is the assertion that Brahman becomes covered. And when you pursue that question, you get circular reasoning. How does Brahman become covered? Well, actually, it doesn't become covered. It's only Maya. Well, where does the Maya come from? Well, it's just illusion. And then if Brahman is supreme, then how does Brahman become less than or covered by Maya? In other words, the Vaishnava understanding is there's the tiny living entity and Parabrahman, wishing to not make a distinction between, because as soon as you have Brahman and Parabrahman, then you have two, then you don't have monism anymore. You have what they would call dualism, and that's wrong, so it's got to be monism. Because the previous assumption is it's all one. So you can't have Brahman and Parabrahman. So then how does Parabrahman become covered? That would make Maya or illusion greater than Parabrahman. And the answer is, it doesn't. It's just illusion. Well, then why is the appearance? Well, it just appears to be actually we are Brahman. Well, then how did we get to the stage where we're thinking other than who we really are? That's illusion. Well, it doesn't exist. It's circular reasoning. Where does that illusion, which appears to exist, come from that covers Brahman? Well, it doesn't come from anywhere. It doesn't exist. There's extensions of that. You know, Vishnu or Krishna or the appearances of Bhagavan within this world. I mean, this is offensive to even speak, but their idea is Krishna is Brahman covered by the rarest form of goodness, but still covered. And that's an offense to think like that. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Avajananti mam mudha manushim tanam ashratam. Those who think that I have ashratam, that I have exhumed this manu, this human-like form, they're mistaken. They're fools. Parambhavam ajananto. They don't know my parabhavam, my supreme nature. Mamaviyam anuttamam, which is inexhaustible and infallible. Krishna's appearance in this world is in his spiritual form, and he can do it. He has all potencies. Now that's something that monists don't like, potencies. As soon as you have potencies, then you have two. You have potencies and potent. No potencies. They just neutered God. No potencies. And he has no form, and he has no qualities, and he has no personality. This is offensive. One who is a devotee who hears like this doesn't like to hear like that. Your father has no personality. Your father has no head. like some, you know, street person from New York saying, no qualities, no character, no form. He exists, but he doesn't have any of those things. It's offensive. Someone you have great affection for to hear that kind of speech, you don't like to hear that kind of speech. And so one will speak in contrary. That's not so. Why are you speaking these misleading ideas? The Supreme Father has spiritual form. He has all potencies, and so on. And so the message in the verse is that the monists do not have access to this Paramahamsa stage, to the stage that they're in the same something is missing position that Vyasa is in. The vacuum that Prabhupada is speaking of in the purport, that's something is missing. There's my heart and there's this hole right in the middle, and I'm feeling despondency. The Sanskrit words are bhata. He's feeling there's some defect. Or in this verse, kilam. Kilam atmanam. There's kilam and akilam. There is some inferior or superior. Not inferior. So he's manyamanasya. He's feeling this regret. Kidyataha. And this is Vaishnava. Bhaktivinoda Thakur teaches us that for a Vaishnava, the feelings of regret are purifying. The feelings of regret may include, I've wasted so much of my life, running the opposite direction away from that position of real happiness. What a fool. And now, because I've done that, I'm implicated in all of that foolishness and all the reactions and all the misidentifications and all the illusions and the responsibility in the form of various sufferings for all of those, all of that foolishness. In Bhaktivinoda Thakur's Sharanagati songs, the first series of songs, 11 of them, something like that, are on this theme of regret, of expressions of humility. So here, Vyas, the compiler of the Vedas, such a qualified person, the Shaktivesh avatar bearing the Lord's literary potency, that's up there. He's feeling this regret. Kidyataha, akila kidyataha. This diminutive sense of his standing before Krishna. Actually, it's an ecstasy. And that's also explained. From within his heart, Krishna is inspiring that feeling. Prabhupada writes, the inspiration was infused by Sri Krishna directly in the heart of Vyas. And what was that feeling? He felt the vacuum. He felt this defect. Although I've tried, I was instructed by Narada to compile the Vedas, and so I did. I did my very best, but there's something missing. And we'll all feel that, regardless of qualification, how many certificates we have on our wall of how people have appreciated something or other, we've excelled, and we have all of our credentials. If an honest person will have to acknowledge there's something missing, unless the in the case of Vyas, because he's a literary person, that he has, through his literary work, he's brought sufficient attention to the linking process that connects him with the Supreme. So that's for Vyas, for a literary person. So unless that kind of literary composition is created, he will feel that insufficiency. So some of the rest of us may not be literary persons. We have some other gift that Krishna has given us. Someone can sing, someone can work, someone can manage, someone can do this, someone can do that. So it's not just the doing of those things. Vyas did his thing, but he's feeling despondency. There's a hole. There's a vacuum. And feeling regret. So with whatever it is that we have, the glorification of the personality of Godhead as the expression that comes from our life, and the carrying of that consciousness within us. So Vyasa's service was to take the Vedas and compile them and divide them, so it was easily understandable, and he did it. But the purpose behind all of that was not... So we can also go through our life and be religious, be good and nice and help people and be kind, and there's still going to be this insufficiency. Even if it's all good, there's still going to be this insufficiency. Unless that consciousness of full submission to the personality of Godhead, and when that's there, the expression of our life's work, life's activity, or whatever contribution we're making while we're breathing and walking around here, that will have its impact, or not, depending upon the consciousness that we're carrying. And so, conveniently, Vyas has a spiritual master who is Narada, and Narada has this uncanny ability to know just what's going on and show up right at the right time, and there he is to rescue, to carry Vyas to the next stage. And that's a very important message in itself also, that even you may be Vyasadev, that connection with spiritual master in disciplic succession is Krishna's arrangement. Even you may be Vyasadeva, empowered avatar, this arrangement is Krishna's arrangement. Krishna's teaching through that example. And what is the function that Narada is to perform? It's to carry him to the other side of this feeling of something's missing. And what's his qualification to do that? He received that qualification from Brahma, who received it from the personality of Godhead directly. Significant, the name indicating Brahma, there's many names indicating Brahma, but specifically it's Vidhi. Vidhivan. He's not, Narada is not Brahma, but he's one who's representing Brahma. So he's Vidhivan, and Brahma is Vidhi. He's honored as Brahma is honored, although he's the son of Brahma. But he's also the disciple of Brahma, and he's carrying all that Brahma has because Brahma gave it to him. And all that Brahma has is because Krishna gave it to him. And what Krishna gave to him was perfect knowledge, not only perfect knowledge, realization in the seat of consciousness of that perfect knowledge. And that was passed by Narada to Brahma to Narada. And what's the coming attraction here is that Narada is going to pass that on to Vyas. And we have the great opportunity of eavesdropping. And that eavesdropping is the same thing that happened when Maitreya was hearing Uddhava and Krishna discussing. He heard directly. Krishna was speaking to Uddhava, and he was seated at the same place in the forest of Vrindavan by the bank of the river Jamuna after Krishna had indicated to Uddhava that he was planning to leave. His pastimes were over. So he was protecting his dear devotee Uddhava and indicated to Uddhava, you should leave and go to the ashram of the devotees of Naradarayan Rishi because their purity will protect you. After I leave, it gets really bad around here. Kali Yuga begins and I want you to not have to experience that. So go to that ashram and take shelter there. And so on the order of Krishna, Uddhava went, but he couldn't do it. He couldn't stand the separation of Krishna. So he went back to Dwarka searching for Krishna, and Krishna had gone. So they went like a madman searching for Krishna all over. Where is Krishna? Where is Krishna? Where is Krishna? They found him in the forest in Vrindavan. Beautiful description. He saw Krishna with his long arms stretched to his knees, leaning in a reclining position against a banyan tree, huge banyan tree, and his yellow garments stretching before his body, his beautiful lotus eyes in his four-armed form. And Uddhava ran and prostrated himself before Krishna, sobbing with the anticipation of his soon departure. So then Uddhava, collecting himself, spoke to Krishna. Krishna exchanged the emotion that Uddhava was extending to Krishna. And then the Uddhava Gita is spoken, that found in the 11th canto. This exchange in its preliminary way is in the 3rd canto. And it just so happened that Maitreya, who was in the forest, came along this scene where Uddhava and Krishna were conversing, and he sat nearby and he heard the whole conversation. So on the strength of his hearing from Krishna, he became perfect. And then when Vidura encountered Uddhava, Uddhava sent him to Maitreya, because Maitreya was his elder, and in the presence of one's elder, one's superior, and although Uddhava was in the superior position by Krishna consciousness and intimacy with Krishna, because Maitreya was the elder, he sent him to Maitreya. And Vidura and Maitreya had their talks. So the etiquette by the perfected soul, Uddhava, was observed. Again, thinking of himself in a very humble way, and this humility is just a natural ornament of one who is a devotee. So Vyasadeva is exhibiting that ornament also, feeling diminutive before Krishna and even his work. And Narada is coming with this potency of Brahma to instruct him how that sense of insufficiency can disappear. So that's an exciting lesson to learn, how that feeling can disappear. And the short answer is unalloyed devotional service. When there's a mix This is in the purport also of this verse, when there's a mix, devotional service mixed with I want some prosperity. I want some fruitive gain. I want some temporary enjoyments. After all, I'm working very hard in devotional service. I should get some. It's part of my contract. At least that's what I negotiated. That feeling of insufficiency will be there. Even in devotional service that's mixed with fruitive intention or mixed with speculative knowledge. I think, perhaps, maybe. But the absence of speculative knowledge begins with just receiving descending knowledge, and when that descending knowledge comes into the heart of one who is eager to hear, tadvidhi pranipatena pariprashnena sevaya upadikshanti te jnanam jnaninas tatvadarshana. The seer of the truth, the tatvadarshi, can impart that knowledge. That's this descending knowledge process, rather than the ascending knowledge process, which we're very trained up in. And because we're so trained up in it, the tendency is to take that same ascending knowledge paradigm into devotional service. Let me figure it out. I'm smart. It doesn't work that way. It doesn't work that way. And when we approach devotional service with that paradigm, that mentality, that mindset, we feel that vacuum. There's something missing. There's something not right. It's not something wrong with the process. It's something wrong with our approach to the process. So this suprasediti, yenatma suprasediti, vasudeve bhagavati, bhakti yoga prayojitaha, janayati ashu vairagyam, jnanam cha yadahaitakam. That full knowledge will awaken, and full detachment will awaken. When the sense of genuine devotion for the personality of Godhead awakens in the heart, and awakens through the hearing process that's done in the right way. Vyasadeva's the candidate, Narada's the professor, and it's a great combination. As with the sages of Naimisharanya, hearing from Sutta, or Maharaj Prikshit, hearing from Shukadeva Goswami, and by those examples we can understand this is how disciplic succession works. Prabhupada calls it the mystery of disciplic succession. It's very wondrous and mysterious, but it's at the same time it's very scientific. It's mysterious for those who are prone to speculation. They can't figure it out. But for one who enters that disciplic succession process with the proper spirit of devotion, magic happens, and purification comes, and realization comes, and detachment from all temporary pursuits of illusion, maya, awaken naturally. Vasudeve Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojitaha. So that's the message from the second chapter, and now we're hearing in the fourth chapter. Here it is, happening. This is how the Puranic literature works. The principles are identified, and here's examples of them. And it sure helps to have examples. It helps to have, beyond examples that are within the literature, to have examples in life. Have like living examples. This is the principle. This is the example from the Puranas, and here's real life. So our responsibility is to become those real life examples of the principles, and we are guided by the examples found within the scripture. It's not that we are them or we can imitate them, but the principles can become very inspiring for us. And we shrinvanti, we hear. Gayanti, we describe. And gayanti, we internalize. We live according to those messages, or try to. We apply those principles and the inspiring examples in our practical day-to-day life. And then, well, one can provide, by that method, living examples of what the scriptures teach. And is it possible? You bet. It's not that Prabhupada's message was this impossible, utopian, it can't really happen, it's just teasing you. Try for it and you can't get it, kind of teasing. That's not. One's life can be progressively in complete harmony, in complete fidelity with these wonderful teachings. That's what's intended to happen. The one who approaches it in the proper manner can receive that gift. Our great acharyas wanted to give that gift. We just have to have our hands extended, eager to receive that gift, and then apply it. Not just say thank you, but the thank you is best expressed by applying it. And then the world becomes filled with at least some examples. That's what Prabhupada wanted. His mission, he declared, was to create in this world a class of first-class persons. Examples, beacons in the darkness for this dark age of Kali. And that's what we're supposed to be doing. Striving like that. Not just taking, but giving back in the form of example. Just by being examples in this world, that's very illuminating, it's very beneficial for society. And then whatever words are spoken, they'll be taken much more seriously, because behind the words there's some purity. Our teaching is purity is the force. The books are the basis. Utility is the principle. Purity is the force. And preaching is the essence, these four principles found right in the scripture. Hare Krishna. Any discussion or comments? Yes, Jitu?
Maharaj, in some lectures that I've heard, you described the difference between Brahmavadi and Mayavadi. The question was, how does one get to the Brahmavadi stage? Because it seems like a Mayavadi really would actually be your life to be a Brahmavadi, or that was what I understood. But if Mayavadi is a really illusion, or sort of not an illusion, but imagine maybe.
Well, how does one become anything? It's by association. In Rishabh Dev's teachings, he teaches Mahat Sevam Dvaram Ahur Vimuktes. And in the purport, Prabhupada explains this word Mahat can mean either one of two categories. The transcendentalist, who is a devotee, or the transcendentalist, who is a Brahmavadi. And how does one become a Brahmavadi? By Mahat Sevam. Dvaram Ahur Vimuktes. How does one become a scholar? How does one become a drunkard? How does one become an engineer? How does one become a devotee? How does one become a monist? So, monists or Brahman-realized persons are very rare. There are those that have not realized Brahman, but they're simply offensive by word jugglery to say, I am Brahman, I'll take sannyas, and then I become Narayan, and I will call you Narayan, and you call me Narayan, and we're Narayan. Just by changing dress and renouncing the world. It's a sham. It's offensive. And so their philosophy is offensive. The Brahmavadi, the main distinction, as you, I'm sure you heard, is the Brahmavadi, just like the four Kumaras and Shukadeva Goswami, they were Brahman realized. They didn't have an attitude towards Narayan, like he doesn't exist, he's false, varieties don't exist. They had some real, they were tuned into or realized in Brahman. When they came in contact, when the four Kumaras came to the gates of Vaikuntha and they smelled the fragrance of the tulsi and the sandalwood on the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord, they became very attracted. They became devotees just by that experience, because they didn't have an attitude problem. But impersonalists have an attitude problem. It starts with a philosophical, it appears to be a philosophical, but the deeper is its enmity towards he who is actually supreme. And so philosophically we would try to put him out of existence. But that doesn't put Narayan out of existence by philosophical jugglery. He has no quality, he has no form, he has no personality. And the ultimate analysis, all there is Brahman, and so we're striving to become one with Brahman. And so forth. When in fact they don't live their life by such ideas. What to speak of such ideas are wrong. It's all one. So there's a gulf of difference, vast difference. Now Prabhupada does not make such a big point about this distinction. He mentions it. And my understanding, I don't know any explicit reason why, but my understanding is that a Brahman-realized soul is very rare. And there's lots of people who are carrying philosophical jugglery in that way. Just as Lord Chaitanya, again, Lord Chaitanya's in the 7th chapter of Adi Lila, his discussion with the Prakashananda Saraswati, his explanation is that Shankaracharya's renderings of the scripture, it's all secondary meanings and it's just distorted and beyond recognition. The real meaning is obvious. And so his meaning can't be accepted. It's erroneous. And Shankaracharya, or the Prakashananda Saraswati acknowledged, what you say is true. By Sanskrit rule, the direct meaning is to be taken. Unless it's just inappropriate, and then you take the secondary meaning. So his platform was the primary meaning must be rejected because of a prior assumption. The prior assumption is everything is one, and so you can't take the direct meaning, you have to take an indirect meaning. And here we go. Romper room. Indirect meanings all over the place, such that the actual meaning is unrecognizable. So it's deceptive. It's, Lord Chaitanya indicated, this is deceptive.
So such verses can never become number one because it's completely wrong.
Yes. There's just hovering on the platform of mental speculation. Manorate nasati dhavato bahi. Manorata. param abhakta sukato mahadguna. And no good qualities will manifest in their character. That's the scriptural statement. Because the Supreme can't be approached through the chariot of the mind. By extending the mind as far as you can extend the mind, is it possible to encompass the Supreme? He's in another plane, another realm altogether. The mind cannot approach. The vehicle of getting to the Supreme is not through the mind. It's this descending process, and he reveals himself. That's how it happens. And he chooses to not make that revelation in the hearts of those who are inimical. He reserves the right, Prabhupada explains. And so if one is envious of the Supreme, one will be envious of those who represent the Supreme. Or conversely, if one is eager for taking shelter of the Supreme, one will be eager to take shelter of one who is representing the Supreme. And that's Narada's case, or Vyas approaching Narada. Anything else? Yes.
How does a student continue his practice if he's not in association with other devotees? If he goes to a place where there are no other devotees, and he is not in direct contact with his guru, how does he progress?
Well, I'll give a practical explanation of how that might be possible for someone living in Champaign-Urbana, but I can also describe in principle how it might work in a theoretical situation. There's two ways to associate. This is Prabhupada's teaching. One is called Vani and the other is called Vapu. Vani is by instruction. Vapu is by physical presence. When one is in physical presence, when there's an opportunity for physical presence, Prabhupada's teaching is one should take that up. You have an opportunity. And when there is physical presence, then there's two simultaneously, Vapu and Vani. Of the two, the more important one is Vani. Not just to do some physical proximate something or other, but to hear and receive instruction and apply those instructions. And then when physical presence is removed, the Vani remains. Now, in this age of Kali, one of the things that we have that is of value is through technology, Vani can be accessed. Or sound, or video, or so many ways that one can access Vani. So Prabhupada was very careful to utilize recording devices and printing presses and microphones and so that in his physical absence, even while on the planet, devotees all over the world could get his association. And after his physical departure, that association is still available through instruction. And so many of the representatives, Prabhupada's system was that he personally trained individuals. And then he instructed those individuals, you pass on the message. This was in his physical presence, so that I can continue to focus on translating work. So that after I'm gone, this will remain. you train others as I have trained you. And so by that method, others were getting Prabhupada's association through those who Prabhupada had trained. And that system exists today as well. Persons that were trained by Prabhupada who have trained persons to train persons. And that system exists. That opportunity, practically speaking, in Champaign-Urbana exists. I explain. There's Prabhupada's disciple and his wife, and there's a group of young men. They have separate houses, and they have separate. They're doing parallel programs, and they work closely together when it comes to larger functions, but their work schedule is such, just like your example with students, they're students. But they're, every morning and every evening, they're hearing recordings and then discussing them. And who they're hearing from is their teacher. He's a professor at IIT Delhi, and the one that did his undergraduate work there is now doing this. We just finished his graduate study, and from that he would hear from his teacher every morning, every evening, and other students started coming to hear and having kirtan. And so they were connected through that method, and then email letters back and forth on a regular basis, getting detailed instructions and detailed instructions and detailed instructions from their teacher, who is representing his spiritual master. And that way, association is made available. Now, Vedic tradition would be, you know, there wasn't email, there wasn't recording, you know, it was just one place, and then those people in that place would have the proximate association of their spiritual master and come and inquire and be trained. And in some cases, they would have different ashrams and visit those different ashrams and train those people in those places. But by the principle of yukta vairagya, the principle of utilizing what Krishna has in Krishna's service, Prabhupada created a worldwide organization where he also traveled the world 11 times or something like that, and gave personal association, but when he wasn't physically present, through his recorded material, association, and it's still available today by that method. So one can receive detailed instructions even without physical presence. It places a great responsibility on the part of the student and the person who is offering some training and guidance and instruction to both be very diligent in the inquiring and the application side, and the being very tuned into the individual devotee and their needs, and that relationship becomes a very important and responsible relationship. But what if one invests what it deserves, then it's a very dynamic combination. Persons can feel very much connected and make significant advancement and have all relevant inquiries addressed reasonably quickly. Anything else? Yeah.
In the real world, say competition drives excellence. Two students, for example, in the class, one studies harder than the other. It's better, answers the question better, and gets a better grade.
Not always. I mean, some persons that I went to school with, they hardly did anything, and they always got A's. No, they're just brilliant. They're endowed with brilliance.
Okay.
And some persons try very hard, and just they don't achieve the same as the person who's the brilliant student. So it's not just our application in the real world, it's just how diligently we apply ourselves. There's a very wonderful example of this in Lord Chaitanya's life when he had in Navadvip there was a visit by Keshava Kashmiri, a brahmana from Kashmir, who had traveled all over India and he had earned the title Digvijay. In debate he had defeated everybody and had thousands of disciples that were following around this Digvijay pundit. So he came to Navadvip hearing that it's a great seat of education, and he asked who is the most learned person. All the brahmanas pointed to this young Nimai. Although he teaches Sanskrit grammar, he is the most qualified brahmana here in all of Navadvip. So he came to meet him. And Lord Chaitanya understood his mentality. And so he spoke with him in great humility. In short, in the course of their exchange, the mind of Digvijay Pandit went blank. And he felt, Goddess Saraswati has let me down. Why is this? And then he had in a dream, Goddess Saraswati indicated, you are receiving everything from me, and I'm receiving everything from him. How can I enable you to defeat him? Because of your pride in what you've gotten from me, you've made an offense. You must go back and fall at his feet and apologize. Seek his forgiveness. Learn from him. That was a big thing to do for a Digvijay Pandit, because he was filled with pride. But he understood the message and he did so. So, capacity plus endeavor still is dependent upon the Supreme Lord, who supplies the capacity and rewards the endeavor. And that's not just in academics, and it's in anything in life. Go in the kitchen and try to cook an offering. A good cook should be able to cook a good offering. But supposing it just happens that things burn or something. It's all even person with talent, it's dependent upon the Supreme Lord. And that's the seat of consciousness of a devotee. I take whatever Krishna has given and I'm using it in his service, including the student. One who is a student devotee at heart understands these are tools or gifts that Krishna has given. Let me glorify Krishna. Let me use these in explicit glorification and appreciation of Krishna. Let all attention go to Krishna. Let me, more than the materialist, let me strive to glorify Krishna. And such a person receives blessings from Krishna. But their mentality isn't, oh great, now I've got in this pocket over here, I've got so much more recognition because I tried to please Krishna. It's not, you know, there's no two pockets. It's just for Krishna. At least, that's the objective. It's the cultivation objective of devotion. Everything's from Krishna and everything is for Krishna. It applies to all fields of life. Internal, domestic, occupation, social, every exchange that one has, every endeavor that one has, the principle applies universally. If that's at the seat of one's consciousness, it comes out. And it's very mystical, it's very exciting, it's amazing. And the feeling is, wow, Krishna is really so kind and so loving. And even through tribulation, Krishna carries one to the other side of tribulation. Scriptures are filled with it, and our own life experiences become filled with it. Krishna doesn't promise, you'll never have any difficulty, become my devotee. He promises, I'll carry you to the other side of that difficulty. Yogakshema vahamyaham. Whatever it is that you have, I preserve. Whatever it is that you acquire, I provide it. But there's a condition from our side. Krishna's looking to see. Ananyas chintayanto mam. Yejana pariyopasate tesham nityabhiyuktanam. Okay, there's the qualification. Yogakshima vahamyam. And that's the realization of a devotee. And the point that's being made in the purport is the monist will never have that realization. However, theoretically, they configure their minds. They'll never have that realization. That's unfortunate. Anything else? Okay, thank you. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.